This is an ABC podcast.
The buzz you hear around me comes from the streets of Bankstown in the heart of multicultural and multi-faith Australia. I'm Andrew West. Welcome to the Religion and Ethics Report. And today the program is coming to you from Western Sydney, but with a couple of detours to suburban Brisbane and far north Queensland. With the election a bit over a week away, we wanted to ask what impact key religious communities could have on the result, and there's no better place to start than Western Sydney. This arc of suburbs, from Blacktown in the northwest to Liverpool in the southwest, is the most religious part of Australia. The census data tells us that here people of all religions believe most deeply and they worship most frequently. Now, later we'll take a train a couple of stops east to meet Dr. Jamal Rifi, a GP and interfaith leader. But let's start by looking at one community that stretches right across Australia, one that includes the Prime Minister Scott Morrison. You may have seen a recent photograph of the Prime Minister attending Easter services at his Pentecostal church. You know, his hand was raised in worship. What might surprise you is that Pentecostals aren't locked in behind conservative political parties. In our Melbourne studio is Dr. Andrew Singleton of Deakin University, who's an expert in Pentecostalism. Andrew, welcome.
Thank you very much, Andrew.
Is there, in fact, a discrete Pentecostal vote?
There has been a discrete Pentecostal vote in Australia. So that obviously first manifested itself with the advent of the Family First Party that came out of the Pentecostal movement in South Australia. And my feeling from analysing data around Pentecostals is that they tend to have similar feelings and issues around social issues, particularly marriage equality, abortion, LGBTQI issues. So I think if they're looking at politicians and their platform in relation to those things, then they would definitely vote on those issues because they feel strongly about it.
Well, let's wrap some numbers around this because it is an election, Andrew, and numbers are what counts. I think there's about 270,000 people who identify as Pentecostal in Australia. Where are there large communities, clusters of Pentecostal worshippers?
When we count Pentecostals, you have the opportunity in the census to nominate your religious affiliation. And when you get down to that level, you have to say that you're a Pentecostal. And they've been particularly good in recent years in kind of saying, this is what I am, beyond just affiliation with a particular church. But there are other independent church members who are kind of Pentecostal in affiliation. So we kind of need to just take that in mind, even though they don't say that they're Pentecostal. So for the most part, Pentecostals in Australia cluster in the major cities, so Melbourne and Sydney have the most. And for the most part, they cluster in traditional Bible Belt areas, so that's the outer suburban ring. So that's evident in Sydney, Melbourne and Brisbane. Almost all of the inner city congregations, and there are a number of significant Pentecostal inner city congregations, they prosper for two main reasons. One is that they're attracting international students. So say Melbourne, Hillsong has a church right here in the centre of the city, and that's absolutely chockers full of international students from East Asia. And also migrant populations too, and they do often cluster around the inner city.
Yeah.
My suburb, for example, Footscray, has many independent Pentecostal churches and is, you know, a very large overseas-born population.
When it comes to doing the numbers for this election, let's take a state like Queensland, which is likely to be a decisive state. How many Pentecostals are we talking about there and where are they grouped?
So there's about 72,000 Pentecostals in Queensland, and if you add kind of independent and charismatically minded people, that'd be north of 100,000. And for the most part, they're not grouped evenly across different seats. And there's clusters of Pentecostals in seats like Bonner, Ford and Oxley, which kind of, and Rankin, which kind of ring Brisbane, except Bonner, which is in the inner part of Brisbane, but a kind of socioeconomically disadvantaged area. But for the most part, the Pentecostals kind of cluster in that Brisbane Bible Belt, tending towards Ipswich.
Mm-hmm. And I think also in far north Queensland, there's a rather sizable community. Is it in a very marginal seat?
Actually, the largest cluster of Pentecostals is in far north Queensland. Very far north Queensland is Leichhardt. But there's,
which is a marginal seat.
It's in play. It's not Anthony Green, but it's 4%.
Yeah.
So definitely. And seat of Ford, which is around the area of Logan, is a very wafer-thin margin in favour of the LNP party. And that's got a large cluster of Pentecostals there.
I noticed that in the couple of debates that we've had so far, Bill Shorten has been, you know, really gone out of his way to be respectful towards Scott Morrison and his religious practice, Scott Morrison being a practicing Pentecostal. Is this vote up for grabs then? You know, Bill Shorten having some policies in the environment that may appeal to young Pentecostals, is he seeking some of this vote that others might think was simply out of reach?
I think so. So it's proven in recent times on the right side of politics that religious conservatives kind of cluster together around social issues. So that threads in, you know, very conservative Protestant sects, Pentecostals, Mormons, and they even some crossover with, say, how Muslims might feel about particular social issues. And so I guess Bill Shorten is conscious that represents an important constituency, and it would be loath to kind of marginalise them because they've proven to be politically organised and effective.
How big are the churches in an organising sense? Do they organise politically in the way that the black church in America and the evangelical church in America organise?
Yeah, absolutely. So the white evangelical church in the United States, sort of beginning in the 1980s, kind of wrote the playbook around political organisation. And we've seen that they've completely reframed politics and political organisation in the United States. And that playbook has been well adopted by evangelicals and Pentecostals in Australia. And also those kinds of people and communities are much better at kind of becoming socially engaged. You know, they see it as part of their calling is to be oriented towards the community and to altruism. And so it's not difficult to motivate people like that to become politically engaged, to hand out how to vote cards, to do all the other forms of political organisation that are important in a grassroots level.
Andrew, one of the reasons why I'm so fascinated by the notion of a Pentecostal vote maybe being at play in this election is because your very extensive research, very interesting research, also says that Pentecostalism overlaps with emerging multicultural communities, and especially communities from sub-Saharan Africa, from Latin America, from Asia and Oceania, that is the South Pacific. Those are communities that have historically tilted Labour, but they're also very religious. I guess that's why I'm wondering if this vote, even though you've said it's socially conservative, is it in play?
I think it's absolutely in play. It's definitely true that Pentecostals, there's no more kind of ethnically and culturally diverse denomination in Australia, and that's only increasing so because of large flows of migration from those places that you name. So now more than a third of all Pentecostals are born outside of Australia, and that's increased substantially in recent decades. In fact, that's most of where their growth comes from. And for those people and communities, those sort of social issues are really important because they see it as tied to God's own agenda here on earth.
Yeah, but I'm also thinking, though, if you look at electoral data from the past few elections, Pacific Islander communities tend to be very pro-Labour, as do sub-Saharan African communities, as do Filipino communities, for example, and yet it correlates with a very strong religious identification. I guess that's why I'm saying you can't put these Pentecostal voters automatically in the camp of political conservatives, even if they have some conservative social values. Or am I way off beam here?
No, I would agree with that assessment. I really think it's what is the election turning on? So when the marriage equality vote, that was really turning on one issue. And so you could see religious affiliation and preference coming into play, and that was the deciding factor. But I haven't seen those kinds of issues being at play in this particular election. I think it's around climate change, social equity, welcoming of refugees. And so I agree with your assessment. I think that the vote could well play out in the most interesting kinds of ways because of what the election is turning on.
Great to talk to you, Dr. Andrew Singleton of Deakin University. He's an expert in Pentecostalism and new religions in Australia. Andrew, thanks for joining us from our Melbourne studio as we bring you this program from Western Sydney, the most religiously observant part of Australia. Thanks for being with us on the Religion and Ethics Report.
My pleasure. Thank you, Andrew.
You heard Andrew refer to the increasingly multicultural nature of Pentecostalism. Here in Bankstown, which was once represented by former Prime Minister Paul Keating, you'll see faces from China and Vietnam, the Middle East, India, Pakistan, Sub-Saharan Africa, the Pacific Islands. This is the beating heart of Australian diversity. The mosques, the temples, the churches in this part of Australia are always open and they're nearly always full, and that has an effect on politics. Let's find out more from one of the leading experts. Associate Professor Awais Paracha is a geographer and demographer at Western Sydney University. Awais, good to see you.
Thank you, Andrew.
I've described this part of Sydney as the most religiously observant part of Australia. What makes it that?
It's not only Bankstown, but it would be the four local government areas of Canterbury, Bankstown, Liverpool, Cumberland and Fairfield, and they are quite similar. And I would agree that they are the multicultural heart of Australia. The reason we have the highest religious following or religious adherent in this part of the city, the first one is that we have the largest concentration of non-English speaking migrant overseas born populations here. So they are made up of Middle Eastern populations, both Muslim and Christian, but we also have a large number of Hindus and Buddhists, as well as some Christians. Now, these people, they come from very conservative societies. So when they come here, they still maintain their conservatism and affiliation with religion.
Yeah, but they come to Australia because Australia is or should be a pluralist country that allows them, one hopes, to be conservative, to be liberal, to be whatever they want to be.
Yeah, when I said conservative, I meant that they strongly follow religion. So they have strong family ties and they have strong ties with their mosques and with their churches. I'm also talking in the context of their response to the same-sex marriage, because this was something that was discussed widely in the media.
And we should just point out, Awais, that in the 2017 same-sex marriage ballot, I think 12 of the 17 electorates that voted no in the same-sex marriage ballot were in Sydney and largely in Western Sydney, sometimes results of over 70%. So what broader story does that tell?
This story is related to your previous question, like why we have a strong religious following here. Now, this is related to, I think, two main factors. So the first one is the socioeconomics. Now, in my research, I can see that the higher socioeconomic people tend to not need God so much as the lower socioeconomic people. That is one explanation. So the one main variable which explains faith or loss of faith is a socioeconomic condition of people. The second is most of the loss of faith in Australia has been among Christians. So those areas where there were more Christians, there has been more loss of faith, and those areas where there were relatively less Christians, such as southwestern Sydney, including Bankstown where we are now, there has been less loss of faith, and hence there has been more religion. The third one is that the movement that's going on in the broader international societies of the communities we find here. For example, Muslims have become more religious in the past 50 years because of probably Saudi Arabian influence or other influences, so they are more religious. And these days, the local communities in Australia, they maintain through social media and other means of communication these ties. Similarly, Hindus have ties with India, and in India there is a strong nationalist Hindu tilt towards in the politics.
So let's put some hard data around some of this. What sort of numbers are we talking about where Western Sydney differs quite substantially in its ethnic and religious makeup from the rest of Australia?
So in southwestern Sydney, which has these phenomena as more pronounced as whole of Western Sydney, the Muslim population, for example, would range from 10 to 20% in the four LGAs of Cumberland, Canterbury, Bankstown, Fairfield, and Liverpool. In the same LGAs, the overseas-born population can be more than 50%. And then when we talk about the overseas-born population, that's largely non-English speaking. Also, these four LGAs would appear as having the largest amount of socioeconomic disadvantage. So they are quite unique in that sense. They are highly multicultural, but also they are highly disadvantaged.
How does this show up in politics? Because, yes, these are socially conservative communities, and yet they persistently vote in very high numbers for the centre-left party. Is there a tension there?
There absolutely is. If not tension, there is a discrepancy there. So these parts, the four LGAs I mentioned, are also Labour heartland. Nobody ever wins from here. So these are not the tilt seats or electorates where somebody else could win the next time. So it's always Labour. And there would be, I would imagine, a sizable population that votes for even Greens, relatively speaking. So they should be naturally a liberal ally because they are conservative socially and they are followers of religion. But I think these people have a sense that liberals are perhaps more for the higher end of the town, more affluent people, and maybe their conservatism is somehow different from the conservatism that we find in this part of the city. And maybe they have some doubts about liberals' intentions about multiculturalism even. So for those reasons, I think they stick with Labour, but I think it, more than anything, it is the socioeconomics. So these people are socioeconomically disadvantaged, and Labour is the natural party for them to vote for.
You have concentrated a lot, for example, on the non-Christian communities, but for Christians, this is still quite a big and observant area. There's a lot of Eastern Rite Christians, I believe, from the Eastern Rite churches, Middle Eastern Christians, for example, yes, who are present.
Yes, in this area you would find the Coptic Christians, and they are in large number, largely coming from Egypt, but there are also Maronites from Lebanon, and they are highly religious as well. But also, not in this part of the city, but in Blacktown, you would find 10% of the population is Filipino, and they are Catholic, and they are very strong and highly religious and observant Catholics. There are those communities, and of course, we can see in these days in the news with Israel Flau, with his comments, so there is this
Pacific Islander communities.
They are, percentage is not so large, but in Western Sydney, such as Blacktown and Penrith Council areas, you can find sizable communities.
Awais, what's the secret to the way these communities, which in the Middle East are often at odds with each other, what's the secret of the way they rub along and get along together in a country like Australia?
Yeah, actually, this is not only the case for Muslim and Christian Arabs, but it's also the case for people from India and Pakistan. They get along very well here, which tells me that religion should be understood in a broader cultural sense. So religion is probably an element of the broader culture that you have, which is your language, which is your food, which is your manners, the way in which you meet each other, you greet each other, and so on and so forth. And you can establish a relationship, a link with each other through this language, common heritage, common food very quickly. This friction that these people have is probably due to a certain political conditions that are found in those places which are absent in Australia. So Australia is lovely in that regard, that these communities can do what they are unable to do over there.
Well, great to talk to you. Associate Professor Awais Piracha, he's an expert in demography and geography here in Sydney. He's studied closely ethnic and religious communities in this most religiously observant part of Australia. Awais, thank you very much for joining us on the Religion and Ethics Report here in Bankstown.
Pleasure. I enjoyed that.
Okay then, it's getting close to dinner time, and I have an invitation to join someone who's well known and very well connected as an interfaith leader. He's a GP, he lives in Belmore, a couple of stops east on the Bankstown train line.
This station is in Belmore.
Assalamu alaikum. How are you? Come on, Andrew.
Hello, how are you?
Assalamu alaikum.
Hi.
Yes, Andrew. Thank you for letting me join you. Where would you like me to sit?
You can sit here.
So I've just had a beautiful dinner to help break the fast here in the early season of Ramadan at the home of Dr. Jamal Rifi. Jamal is a Sydney GP here in Western Sydney. He's also one of the most respected community leaders in multicultural Australia. Jamal, thank you for welcoming me to your home.
Thank you for joining us to break the fast during this Ramadan.
Yeah, we're here in your office at home, and I see a picture of you here with Scott Morrison and Jason Clare, the Labour MP. Where was that photograph taken, by the way?
Well, that's just at the beginning of the Kokoda track in Papua New Guinea, 10 years ago, in 2009, when the local federal MP, Jason Clare, and Mr. Scott Morrison decided to get a group of young people from the Cronulla Sutherland Shire and from Canterbury Bankstown area to walk the Kokoda track. We timed it so when Anzac Day, we will be at the Ishurava War Memorial. And we walked together during that track, and that's when my friendship with the current Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, developed at Kokoda track. Yeah.
But you're also, of course, friends with several Labour MPs. You're a non-partisan person, a community leader. And I guess one of the reasons I've come to see you, Jamal, is that even though you are a Muslim leader, you're also someone who's very much in touch with all the religious communities in Western Sydney. You speak with the Eastern Rite Christians. You speak with Hindus and Buddhist leaders in this part of Australia. As we head into this federal election, what issues of concern do they have in common?
They have the same issues as anyone else in Australia. Their standard of living, the changes to the climate and what we are actually doing to address climate changes, taxations. But one main issue that's so far nobody spoke about it, and that is religious freedom in Australia, especially after the 2017 same-sex marriage legislation. In this area, we opposed that legislation. We opposed legislation, but it doesn't mean that we opposed the people who are benefiting from just that legislation. So far, in the federal election, nobody is speaking about religious freedom in Australia, even though it is very much at risk. At the same time, you know, hate speech and racisms, Islamophobia, anti-Semitisms. We have seen many candidates that they fell by the sideways. And it is very unfortunate, but it is a telltale sign that some people, unfortunately, they are going to be our future member of parliament and they hold such abhorrent views.
Yeah, if you take someone like Fraser Anning, you know, his views are so extreme. I wonder, though, whether communities like those in Western Sydney are now robust and strong and they simply ignore a guy like this, or does he cause damage?
We definitely ignore him and we ignore what he stands for. But at the same time, we don't put our head in the sand and say they don't exist. We need to deal with it. Unfortunately, he causes more damage to young people, vulnerable people, and he will be pushing many people who are vulnerable for radicalization to be a tipping point. He will definitely does not help in ensuring the safety and security of all Australians. On the contrary, people like Fraser Anning, they will do more to damage to our community relation.
Yeah, this is very important because you, not just as a GP, but as a community leader, have worked very intensely on stopping the radicalisation of young Muslim youth, particularly men. So this sort of behaviour by Fraser Anning, it's a temptation or is it's a taunt?
Look, the fortunate thing, it came at the tail end of our hard work. Except if he said what he said a couple of years ago, it would have caused even more damage. But right now, because we knew that our boys and girls, they have been the target of the Islamic State propagandists and recruiters, and the majority of it being online, but also there was some people on the ground. We wanted to protect our boys and girls from being the victim of such a terrible ideology, and we did a lot of good work.
You mentioned religious liberty, religious freedom. I read a statement by the Islamic Council of Australia, and it was almost identical to the statements that I might read from the Australian Catholic Bishops' Conference, from parts of the Anglican Church, from the Greek Orthodox. What are the common interests?
We had some fear after the same-sex marriage and the Penny Wong legislations in Parliament, that our religious freedom will be curtailed, and also our religious institution and educational institutions will be affected, especially schools, and most importantly, traditional family units, traditional marriage will also be under pressure. And these are the common belief that we have. We've seen recently what's happening with Israel Folau for expressing his religious belief and how negative impact it came on him.
Yeah. But you know, Jamal, as a doctor, you would have patients from all different types of family arrangements who are part of a very diverse Australia, gender diversity. Where do communities in this part of Western Sydney strike the balance between respect for religious freedom and respect for, say, broader human rights?
Look, definitely, we have no issues. People to practice whatever they believe in that apply to them. But at the same time, we want to have the freedom for us to practice what God has taught us. So, and we can differentiate. We can't change the words of God. But what we can do, it's actually we as a human being, we can respect the law of the land. And if there is such a legislation that will allow people to have same-sex marriage, we have no issues with that. But we don't want that legislation to impact negatively on our traditional value, especially about a family unit, or our school will be forced to hire people that they don't share their belief, or our kids to be taught that their gender is fluid. So we need to strike a balance between these two, not at one at the expense of the other. And I think is actually we have a broad intelligence, and we have a good representations in Parliament for them to reflect this wide varieties of views and to accommodate them.
If it had not been for some of the quite stridently anti-Islamic language of people on the right side of politics, do you think the coalition would have a bigger following in this part of Western Sydney?
They would, not overnight. They have to work hard at it. They need to articulate the multitude of their policy to our local community, and they need to engage. We'll just have to wait for this election and see what's going to happen, and we'll take it from there, because right now it's far too late to do anything.
Thanks again, Jamal, for welcoming you to your home. Dr. Jamal Rifi, he's a GP here in Western Sydney. He's won many accolades for his work as a community leader across all religions, working with both the Labor and the Liberal parties as well. So as we end today's pre-election special program, zipping from the heart of multicultural Sydney to far north Queensland, two things are clear. The votes of usually conservative religious groups like Pentecostals are up for grabs in this election, and they live in several marginal seats that could make the difference. And in the loyal Labor heartland of Western Sydney, voters take their religion very seriously, and they expect politicians to take notice. Well, that is the program for this week. You can find the Religion and Ethics Report at our homepage at the RN website or at the ABC Listen app. God Forbid This Week also looks at the election through the lens of the faith-based media. Thanks to Muta Tadias and Simon Branthwaite. I'm Andrew West. I'm back next week.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.